Hey everyone, welcome to Double D's podcast.
In today's episode, we're going to talk about social life, religion, and all that kind of bullshit. We'll come up with a name for the episode later on, but this is something that we're going to improvise for the first time and see how it turns out. The usual reminder, don't show this to your mom.
Or your grandma.
Because there's cuss words and you don't want their saint ears to hear any of this. Also might be other adult discussions and stuff like that.
There might be. There might be. We will figure it out on the way. So let's hit it.
Let's hit it. Yeah. All right. So I'm thinking we could start with talking about where you can meet Slavs. Where can you find pretty Ukrainian girls that guys want to pick up? And
yeah. I would say it depends on the state. Here, we're talking here in the US specifically, us as Slavs, where we found our community.
Yeah.
Back when we were trying to find it. People that are alike, you know, like kind of what we thought were similarly minded.
Yeah.
Is that the word for it? That kind of had the same culture as us, kind of had the same childhood as us. So probably if we're taking like California, you would only find religious people. Because if you go to Sacramento, California, let me tell you, like every single person you meet, if you meet a Slavic person there, the first question they will ask you is not what's your name, is not what where you're from, is what church you go to.
Exactly.
Who's your pastor? You know?
Seattle is the same situation.
Exactly.
Like Seattle has a lot of big Russian, I mean, Slavic churches now. We can't really, you know, it's not Russian because there's a lot of Belarusians there, a lot of Ukrainians, lots of people from Central Asia as well, like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. But yeah, I feel like, you know, Sacramento and Seattle are very highly Slavic populated.
Yep. And especially after the war started and a lot of people moved here, a lot went to Seattle, a lot went to Washington. And initially the Chicago, I hope I pronounced that right, people from Chicago, will tell me that I don't pronounce it right. Anyway. The biggest Ukrainian diaspora, is that what it's called in English?
I don't know what that means.
This is the biggest accumulation of Ukrainian people historically was in Chicago.
Yeah.
But not necessarily Christians, not necessarily religious people. It was just historically, like back in Soviet Union times.
Interesting.
They immigrated there.
And I didn't know that. Chicago?
I have no idea. I have no idea. And I know the first Ukrainian restaurant ever opened in the U.S. was there.
That's cool. You see, I learn something from you every day. This is awesome. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, a few of our listeners, will probably find this also very interesting. I know we can talk about Georgia a little bit. I know that mostly Slavics are found in northern Georgia. Still, you know, richer areas. Alpharetta.
Russian coming.
Coming, yeah. Marietta in some places.
Sometimes, somewhere.
Depends
yep.
what Marietta, because there is apparently two kinds of Marietta. There is, I forgot what they're called here, you know, what people.
The hood Marietta and the rich Marietta, that's what it is.
Yeah, there is a poorer side of Marietta and then there is a richer side of Marietta. But wherever you can find fancy restaurants and fancy living style, that's where Slavs are, because we strive. We wanna be richies. We're not rich, we just wanna be rich.
Or look
appear, yeah.
Yep.
To tell our relatives in our countries and be like, hey, this is what my life is like now, so that everyone's jealous.
And then on Monday you go to your 9-to-5 that pays you $10 an hour. But you're trying to pretend like you're well off.
Yeah.
But I think yes. So the churches probably would be the biggest, and this is where we found our community first.
Oh, yeah.
It was church.
Yep, that's where we met.
Yep, that's where we met. Yep. secret's out.
Secret is out. That's how we met. We met at church, everyone.
And it was crazy because me personally, my family lived far away from what we talked, Alpharetta coming, Marietta, and we were struggling to find a church. I mean, especially my parents. Like, I wasn't really striving to find a Slavic community specifically, but my parents, because they wanted their own community with the people, you know, they're used to seeing what they look like, the food they eat, the culture, how they speak, you know, just like similar-minded people. And we just wanted to find something that, you know, could help us kind of get into the country.
Yeah.
So what we did were, instead of just going to American church, we were looking for Russian Slavic churches around the area. And the closest one was in Alpharetta, and it was an hour away from where I used to live.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a drive. Obviously, at every church, there's some sort of youth movement.
Yeah.
And kind of like little groups.
Yeah.
On Saturdays, you know, during the week, like Bible study sort of situations. So that's where we met. But we both grew up religious as well.
Yeah. I did. I was literally raised in the church. My dad was a pastor in Uzbekistan. That's why we left Uzbekistan. We went to Russia as religious refugees because we just had surveillance around our house constantly. They didn't like any sort of religion. Muslims, even more so, they would prosecute them, and they got a lot more shit than Baptist churches. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about Baptist / like Pentecostal Protestant churches. They didn't touch Orthodox churches in Uzbekistan, which is kind of interesting to me. I mean, I know why. It's because it's associated with Russia and Uzbek government, with Russian government are trying to be in good terms. So they didn't touch Russians and Orthodox churches, but they didn't like Protestant churches. That's why we went to Russia. Lived in Russia for 8 years. Always went to church there almost every Sunday. Went to camps. Obviously, there was a huge church in Moscow. It's called Slovo Zhizni. I'm sure you've heard about it too.
Yep.
It came from Sweden, apparently. And then the pastor, it's a huge, the mega church. Everyone's familiar with that term. It's called mega church.
Yep. And I think it's like a chain of churches. It's like a McDonald's, but a church.
Yes, exactly.
That exists in many countries. And it's kind of like a same sort of religious. I know it was very conservative.
Really?
I'm not sure the one in Moscow, but I've had friends who went to Slovo Zhizni camps in Kiev like in Ukraine. Uh-huh. It was not specifically in Kiev, it was like in suburbs. But my friend told me that he went to one of those camps because his dad was a pastor, so he made him go to that. It was like a mandatory situation, and he said that all the girls had to wear skirts. Guys couldn't wear shorts. It was a summer camp, y'all. Like,
interesting.
It's a summer camp. You cannot. I mean, it's especially here. I mean, in Ukraine, like, obviously summers maybe are not as hot as here in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Georgia, you would just sweat to death.
Oh yeah.
You would just sweat to death.
And I still see people in fucking jeans and sweatshirts and absolutely hoodies and shit. Like, it's crazy to me.
Absolutely. And I think the first time guys could talk to girls was the last night. You know how it's the last night of the camp? It's always like everyone's dressing up and everything like that. And he said that's the only time we could literally talk to girls, and like some girls confess love to him and something like that. You know, like, you cannot, you know, it's like forbidden love in that camp. So it's very funny how conservative some of those churches are and how ridiculous some of these rules are.
Yeah.
That's I would say the main reasons why we kind of flowed away from that.
But
we both stayed best friends. I mean, it was crazy how we met at church and then stopped.
Yeah, like, I became atheist, and I mean, like, and we're still best friends.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't really talk to people from the church we met. But, you know, it's funny. I know Slovo Zhizni in Moscow is not that conservative. I mean, you always talk, like, I always talked with guys, but also I was probably, like, 10. That's why it wasn't such a huge deal. And I remember having camps in Rizan and other cities. We had one in a countryside. It was amazing. And we had dance classes where you would pair up with someone your height, obviously a boy and a girl, and they would, you know, teach us how to dance. And dances, like, last camp I was in right before I moved to America back in January 2018, we had tango class involved along with
in
waltz.
a Christian camp.
Yeah, tango. Your hips have holy to touch shit. You were almost kissing holy another person. Yeah, it was, you know, it was pretty intense. And camp crush is one thing that is very serious and, like, a lot of people can relate to. Because camp, usually it's kids from all around, the Moscow area mostly. And some people drove there over 6 hours to get there. So you meet them for 1 week and then you fucking never see them again.
Exactly.
But you still develop a crush in that 1 week because you're young and you're stupid.
And then you remember them till the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a real thing. You wouldn't focus on anything during camp time. You're like, oh my god, this is
he looking at me? Is he looking at me?
Yeah,
oh my god,
shushing with
her.
Is he
sharing his pastry with me?
Yeah. Why did he come up to me? Is it just to talk or is it to confess his love to me and say, let's marry?
Because Jesus told him about his wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and I was still very religious. Even like after living like for 4 years in America. We stopped going to church as often because in America, you know, some people have jobs on Sundays. It's okay. You know, we're trying to save money for the house. Then I was going to a mega church in Gainesville. I was in the choir there, and then we just kind of stopped because mega churches to us remind of like Moscow Slova Zhizni, where you just go into and listen to the service, and then you go out, that's it. Like, you don't meet people there. You don't go to that church for, like, gathering. So we decided to find a smaller church. We found a smaller church, but it was too small. They didn't have that many youth folks. Like, they didn't have teenagers. They had a few, like, 8-year-olds. But, like, I was the oldest kid out of there. And obviously, it's boring. How will you find a significant other if there's no one there?
That's why people go to church here.
Yeah, that's why people go to youth, is, you know, to wait until somebody notices you, until you're old enough.
And then you kind of keep an eye on each other, yeah. If, you know, like, you feel that, and then maybe, like, one day you will tell, like,
yeah,
he will tell the girl, oh, do you want to marry me?
Yeah.
But
not,
like,
no dating. Cause
we haven't dated, but she's like, but God told me you're my wife.
Yeah, and like, You check out each other's values. You kind of, you know, ask each other questions like, oh, I'm just wondering, like, what about you guys? How old do you want to be when you have kids? Or, like, how many kids do you want to have? Like, all these personal questions that with people that you've just met. And obviously, you still go to camps with them, so you get closer. You get, you know, attached to this friend group. We played volleyball lots of times, and we, you know, kind of try to eat out at restaurants and stuff like that. So it was a nice time. I don't regret going there. I don't, because if I didn't, I wouldn't meet you. But I, you know, don't regret going there. It was good gathering. I was alone in high school at that time, so it was really important for me to keep up and go every Sunday to youth and you know, meet my friends, drive there with my brother. So it was, you know, it was a good time. But then went to college, values have changed. I was, by the way, I was a creationist.
She had pink hair, y'all.
I had pink hair. Well, yeah, everyone went nuts when I dyed my hair pink. Everyone's like, are you okay? You want attention or something, you know? But, I was creationist since
fine
I was
God, Diana.
Right? Such a sinner. Like, but my parents raised me with Kent Hovind videos about dinosaurs coexisting with humans. I know a lot of people, especially if you're interested in creationism and how that works, a lot of people know about Kent Hovind. It's a guy, I don't remember where he's from, I think he's from Florida. He went to prison one time for avoiding taxes. Yeah.
Is he a pastor?
He used to be. Now he's just a crazy guy doing podcasts and shaming atheists and stuff like that. Not only atheists, but Christians who don't believe that the earth is 6,000 years old, which is nuts to me. Like, what did Jesus say about accepting people, right? Like, yeah, what's up with that? So, until I was 19 years old, I solely believed that the earth wasn't 6,000 years old. But I started dating my boyfriend in senior year of high school, and we had a lot of debates about it, because he is an atheist, and I was, like, super religious Christian. So, he would ask me all these questions, ask me about, like, what do you think about some of the trees that are, like, 10,000 years old? Or, like, some of this, that, the fossils, what about that? What about, you know, evolution? Like, that can't happen in 6,000 years, so... And I was like, I don't believe in evolution. God created Adam and Eve. That's how humans came about. Blah, 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 blah. And then I went to college, still believe that, took geology class, learned about carbon-14 dating, learned about uranium dating, learned about all of that, completely crushed, like, you know, all of my understanding about the world, had my first existential crisis, and like,
well, you went out of that classroom a whole new brand person.
Oh yeah, I did. And then the following semester I took astronomy, so that ruined my perspective about how the moon was made, about the solar system, about the stars. Started reading a few books about exoplanets. I was obsessed with astronomy, wanted it to be my major for a while, but then I realized that I don't want to do math for the rest of my life. So even though I'm not bad at it, I just don't want to. And yeah, I after astronomy class, I was like, well, I mean, God could still exist. You know, evolution is a thing. A lot of people here in America believe, you know, not believe, they know evolution is right. They know about the formation of the solar system, but at the same time, they can believe in God. So that's what I was like, okay, let me, you know, kind of believe in God. Maybe I will, my faith will come around. So I, that's why I was like, you know, maybe it's fine. And then I started watching this YouTube class that was released on YouTube for public view from Yale University, from this professor who had the class. It's called Interpretation of the Jewish Bible. And he said that, you know, how the Bible was made, a few hypotheses. I don't remember which one it's called, but the fact that, you know, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, were not written by a single source. There is actually four to five sources, maybe more, that were just smushed in together. That's why you have a lot of inconsistencies. And I was like, if the Bible is not right, what the fuck do I believe in? You know, like, even if it's Old Testament, I can't ignore the fact that the Old Testament is written like that, while the pastor at church says it's written completely different, interpreting all these verses when... How do you know that that's the verse that was meant to be written like that when the Bible was translated so many fucking times? You know, in the King James Bible, the first English translation, it's not the first English translation, but it's the most popular English translation of the Bible, was translated the way that women are lower than men. You know, they completely ignored all the transgender parts in the Jewish Bible. And I have Jewish friends who do say there is up to five genders in the Jewish Bible. What is it called?
Jewish.
I'm Jewish and the religion. Like, I still believe in Judaism.
Yeah.
But I'm trans, you know, like, that opened my eyes. I was like, okay, like, what do I believe in? And, you know, and then I heard about a theory that Jesus was a follower of Buddha. And then he just brought all those views to Israel, to Jerusalem. And then, you know, that's how the evangelical books were written. And it just fell apart. And I stopped believing. I
watched a lot of debates, atheists, and the, looking at the views, and I realized, you know, that Brian Cox was one of those astronomers who really put a lot of effect into my beliefs. He said that, you know, what if the universe is infinite? What if, you know, it's not finite? If the universe is infinite, there is no place for God in there. And then there's just a lot of, like, those debates. Obviously, you can still believe in God. I wish I did. It would bring me a lot more purpose, probably. But also, I like having a life with no purpose. I like building my own life and not having that constant thought of thinking that someone out there is watching me and I have a predetermined life. So, I don't know. That's how I became, like, agnostic, and I'm still agnostic, but I tell people I'm atheist, because when you say you're agnostic, that means you, like, they can bring you back or whatever, which you can't, because I just don't believe anymore, you know, especially after the war started. I'm like, if God was real, Putin would be dead by now. Like, where's justice?
That's where, my dad, never believed in God. My mom became religious when she was around 25.
Yeah.
And then she went to church, and then she started, going actively to church, and she got baptized and stuff like that, and she started actively going to church and believing in things that they believe in church, and that's how I was raised already.
Yeah.
I was already raised with her being and having certain values. Mm-hmm. My dad never believed in God. He went to church. You know, my mom was trying to kind of involve him into that. But my dad told, like, especially when the war started, not the big war, back in 2014, still a lot of people died back then, and my dad was like, yeah, like, if God was there, why didn't he stop war?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, that's true. I mean, I was trying to tell him back when I was, like, super religious as well. I was like, well, Dad, you know, bad will always happen.
Yeah.
That's, you know, people sinned, and there's no, it's not, it doesn't come from God, it comes from the devil, and, yeah, you know, people just kind of have to deal with whatever they created,
yeah,
in a result of their sin.
Yeah.
So it's not a good thing, but that's what people, you know, do.
Yeah.
But also, no one has seen a miracle, yeah, from God in the past, you know.
Yeah.
And couple of thousand years, at least, that we know of.
As a matter of fact, when people still, they believe in miracles. My parents were, like, performing exorcism in church in Uzbekistan.
Holy mother.
And I read about it. I read about, you know, I listened to this professor from Texas University. He teaches about, you know, the awakening of Satanism and stuff like that. So he talked about how exorcism works and, mm-hmm, the psychological parts that go into it and why people believe in it. He also talked about miracles and how people believe in miracles and how, you know, that all of that is part of, you know, that your psychological thing. Obviously, if you do, like, props to you. I just don't. So that's, like, my thing. And like, one thing that Christian apologetics usually say about, you know, bad stuff that happens in the world is that in the Bible it says that the devil is the prince of this world, but Jesus is prince of peace. So, like, devil is prince of this world, that means that's why diseases exist, that's why bad exists, bad people, conquerors, colonists, shit like that. So I feel like that's a way too simple of an explanation of why bad, yeah, exists. That really oversimplifies the world, which is not how it should be. World is complicated as fuck, and as the older you get, the more you realize that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for me, for you, it was more the scientific side of it that made you leave church and kind of go away from that, and for me it was more of a people thing, because I realized that I wasn't really the happiest there, you know, and that, you know, people like to gossip in church, let me tell you that. And we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
They like to tell you, let me phrase it that way. I knew that those friends that I had in church, they wouldn't remain my friends after I leave. And that was a reason for leaving, ironically. You know, when you have real friends, you know that they will be there for you, whatever happens. You know, whatever you become, you come out, you know, you marry someone they don't like. You are their friend. You have to be there for them. If they are your true friend, you will be there for them. But I knew, I answered that question for myself. I was like, are they going to be there for me if I tell them, like, I don't want to go to church anymore? And I knew the answer to that question.
Yeah.
So I knew that there was going to be a lot of gossip. And there was, I'm sure, when we left, of the reasons or whatever. But, I mean, ultimately, I knew that there was going to be discussion and everything, you know, about, because the church that we went to was pretty small. It was, you know, everyone knows each other. It was like a small village, you know, it was like a small town. Everyone knows each other. So leaving that was hard. It was not easy for me. Like, it took me a minute to kind of flow away from that. You know, and obviously also, you know, Slavics are judgmentalists as fuck.
Yeah.
You know, they are going to judge the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Whether you want it or not. And it's with everyone. And you think like, oh, it's the older Karens, you know, moms. But not only, you know, it's also like young girls and guys, you know, our age that probably taught, you know, judged the fuck out of us. So I knew that I don't want to be a part of that environment, you know?
Yeah.
And also, as I stepped away from the faith, I was more and more understanding that that's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I want to believe in. And I think next time I went to church after that, it was like a couple of months after, and we were like doing the worship, and I stood there and I felt nothing.
Yeah, same.
You know, and I was like, what is going on? You know, I kind of like, I was not in the moment like I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're kind of like singing and, you know, like, your heart's filling up with joy. But then at that point, I was like, I looked around and I was like, holy hell. This place does not look real, you know? It's like, it's kind of not like a cult, but it looked like it at the moment.
It felt like it,
exactly. It was like, what am I doing? Who am I singing to? Like, why am I doing this? Why is everyone like this, you know? And obviously, it was specific to the church that we went to. I mean, like, I'm not saying that every church is, you know, is like that, but a lot of, most of them are. Let me tell you, most of them are, and that's not only Slavic, that's American churches as well. Especially, like, Southern Baptists are very judgmental as well. So I'm just going to tell you guys that, like, if you feel like that's not a good environment for you, just, you know, don't be a part of that. You know, just kind of digging into yourself. Also, us growing, because we grew up in that. We didn't know anything different. Like, our whole life was going to church every Sunday. Easter, Christmas were, like, special, dress up, amazing. You know, like, we had, like, some Christmas performance and Easter performance and Sunday school. And we were part of all of that. And then the church camps, and we were volunteering, and it was a huge part of our lives. So stepping from that, it was challenging. It's kind of like taking a piece of you, but also understanding that there's going to be something that's going to replace that piece.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be you, your new personality,
your identity,
exactly, your new self. And also just why I say don't, it's a little off the topic, but don't start dating early,
mm-hmm.
because you do not know who are you going to become in 5 years. Yeah. And if you're going to tell me, oh, we're going to date and grow together, yes, but also a lot of things change. Just make sure that you don't go off the road. Completely off the road, which a lot of people do start dating like early, at when they're like 14, 15, their high school sweethearts, like early middle school, early high school sweethearts, and they grow together and they're fine, and still they're 35, they have 3 kids and they're happy. But some people really change when they grow up, and you can't really predict that. I mean, it's just a matter of like where your life takes you. So, you know, it's that's what happened to us. You know, I think we just grew, we understood, we made our own choice. It wasn't our parents' choice. It wasn't our friends' choice. It wasn't our partner's choice. It was our choice that we made for ourselves to be happier, yeah. to be where we want to be in this life. So I think that was a very, very crucial part of our life. Really.
It really was. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
We are back. Had to take a short break because I felt like I was going to pass out.
You almost died, y'all.
I did not eat anything today other than Chick-fil-A at college. So, yeah, that was it. But we were talking about social stuff that people do around here to find a community like their own. And we just wanted to say that this is just like our choice to leave the church because we felt like it didn't really match our values anymore. We felt being judged lots of times. I just stopped believing as well. And like, what's the point of going to church if you stop believing? But then also noticed that, you know, friends from church don't check in on you afterwards. You just leave. Obviously, in some churches you do, and you know, thank you for, you know, being such a church where you care about people no matter what they choose to believe in afterwards. But the church that we went to was really just conservative, and there's a lot more drama in that church. We just don't.
Well, I'm not telling you that because I mean it's kind of just a lot.
It's a lot.
It's going to be a 3-hour long episode.
Yes, it's a lot. It's not just the people, because some people go there, they choose to ignore some of the problems. They even if you are a super religious person, let's say you're a creationist from Eastern Europe, and then you believe in all of that same stuff, you're very traditional, very conservative, and you go to this church, you're still gonna notice that there some of it's just not really Christian values. Like a lot of it, obviously it's a masquerade. That's what it is. It's a masquerade. It's, you know, this is my opinion. Obviously, my brother got into a lot of trouble there, and I have a lot of beef with people who I haven't talked to in a while, a lot of beef for what they did to my brother, said about my brother, about me as well. You know, all the gossip that's being spread around is just really, like, I don't care anymore, obviously. It just keeps coming back exactly. to me in my exactly. life. And it's so weird because my life is divided into, you know, college, work, home, and then used to be church. And all the drama that was in church would stay in church. But after I left, it just kept following me around. I would either see some of them in like a store or when I'm hanging out with somebody or whatever, or my brother was still going there and he would bring back all this stuff that was being talked about. He went on camps several times after I left. A lot of drama during camps there as well. And it's just, you know, it's a lot, even for a Christian who has traditional values, traditionally Republican, you would go to that church and you would think this is just a cult, in my opinion. I tried going to American churches, not after I left this church, but before, and I just didn't connect with American religious people as much. Obviously, I have friends who are religious. I have coworkers who are religious. We, you know, talk about stuff sometimes, but more so nowadays, you try to not judge somebody if you're a Christian, because that's the whole, that those are the values of Christian. Like, I was talking to people from non-denominational churches. There is a lot, like, they're a lot chiller. But other than church, the other places that you can go and meet people and find, you know, friendships would be, I would say, college is probably the biggest one, because David decided to not go to college, and I noticed
David
how,
is her brother.
Yeah, I noticed how, you know, he doesn't have as many friends. He doesn't really go outside of his circle he used to talk to when he was in church. So to me, it's just kind of sad, because like that's all he had was that church. But now he doesn't go to college. He doesn't go to that church anymore because he moved to a different state. So, you know, like, what are you left with, basically? I still have friends in college. I have friends in my other college that I transferred from. I have coworkers that my friends at work. You know, I still have Dasha from that same church. But
yep.
Yeah, my number one best friend. But that's how you meet people. You meet people either at church or in college in educational settings. And it's a lot more natural that way. I know obviously a lot of people have online friends. That's great, you know. You can talk to them for years. I know a person who has several online friends. They talk to each other for years and never meet, and it's still fun for them. So yeah, I feel like those are the places where you meet people. But us Slavics, we want to connect with Americans lots of times. And but before you become as Americanized as, for example, me and Dasha are, you go through that stage of just, you know, going from place to place where you can find those people.
Also separating, because, I mean, a lot of people from our culture are looking for only Slavics. Like, some people, I'm afraid to say this, but it's true. A lot of Slavic people think they're better than Americans.
Yeah.
They are convinced. They're like, oh, we have better food. We have better this, better that. Like, we're better looking. Bullshit. I mean, first, it's very, being, again, very judgmental of just because people are different here.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, really. Like, not being, you know, raised in Soviet Union, you know, and being a little different and having different food and freedom.
Freedom.
Uh-huh.
What is that?
What is that? You know, freedom of speech? What? I've never heard of that.
The fuck?
And everything else is, but ultimately a lot of Slavs are very judgmental of Americans and how they live and how they look like and what they eat and their culture. But that's why a lot of Slavs look for Slavic people. You know, they look for Slavic friends, they look for Slavic, you know, realtors, doctors, everything else. Like, they don't trust Americans, which ultimately is a mistake when you're living in the US.
Yep.
You're not gonna go far.
And also, your own kind is gonna fuck you up. There, a lot of times, people who do, like, only get cars from, like, a Russian dealer, or, you know, houses by a Slavic realtor. I mean, thankfully, if you do find a good Slavic realtor, you can, like, actually get a good deal. But, like, we got screwed by Slavic folks who tried to, like, sold us a car right when we came here, because they knew we're newbies. They know we don't know fucking nothing about how this works, about what the cost should be like, because we're like, coming here, like, $10,000, I guess that's good in 2018 for a broken ass car.
Yeah.
And that's how we got screwed over. So most of the times, your own kind is gonna screw you over, because that's just how it is. I can see how older people find comfort in like their own kind, because they don't have to go through trouble of translating that much. They don't have to go through trouble understanding American person. That's why they go straight to like a Slavic financialist or whatever, you know, accountant. Yeah. And that's why they go to a Slavic realtor, because all of those processes are very complicated and you want to understand every bit of it, you know. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, anyway, my point was that it's not always good to look for your own kind. I mean, yeah, it does happen very often that they screw over. There are a lot of honest people. I don't want to say but it's not an exception that someone your own kind will screw over. And also, a lot of people are very closed up. They don't, although they know English, you know, they work for an American company, but they're very closed up. They don't want to let that change them. Although it's going to change, living here will change you.
It will.
It's anywhere in the world, if that's within their own country, you're switching cities or states here in the US or countries or continents.
Yeah.
That's going to ultimately change you. And you resisting that change will not get you far.
It's not.
No. So, for us, since we were very young when we moved here, I mean, I was 17, you were 14 or 13.
13.
She was a baby.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, we had to adjust to this. We had to already grow up with that new mindset, you know? Yeah. So, resisting it would be just stupid.
Yeah, I would agree. Although, I know, one girl who just doesn't want to talk to Americans. She just said, she's like, I've tried my best. Although I don't know how hard she tried, but I've tried my best. They're just not like me. There's so much distance. You can never connect with them. There's so much stupid shit that they laugh about, stupid ideas that they have. They're not deep. They're not, this is what Slavs are looking for, is something deep, like a deep friendship. And my dad kept telling me, I remember, because my dad has a YouTube channel, and I was watching it the other day with my students, trying to, for them to pick up on some Russian. But my dad, he was filming a video in a restaurant while we were celebrating our, fifth year anniversary in America. And he was asking me, he's like, have you found, close friends, Americans? And I told him, yes, I have, you know, my friend from high school. I've talked to this girl for the longest out of everyone I've met here. I have American boyfriend now. But back when he filmed that video, I wasn't dating yet. But you know, you can find someone who you can get close to and find that depth that, you know, as a Slavic person you're looking for. It just takes time and it takes certain social cues to pick up on. Since there is so much different culture, I'm not going to say it's easy. It was easier for me because I was so Americanized. I really tried my best. I really was thinking, I don't want to not have friends. I want to have friends. I want to be Americanized. I want to, you know, be able to understand their jokes. I watched a lot of movies in English, watched The Office to understand the jokes and the stupid humor that Russians call the American humor. And you know, still though, I would agree that if you do find a Slavic friend, it would be a little bit of a deeper friendship, you know?
If you do find a true Slavic friend, that would be a very deep friendship. But also, they can be friends with you and then screw you over a couple of years later and just stop talking to you randomly. Yeah. So you never know.
You never know. Exactly.
You never know.
And we got really close. Friend who came as a Fulbrighter from Russia and not even a year went by, only the academic year before she had to leave and go back to Russia because she's a bitch and she didn't want to stay. So, and we got so close that it feels like I've known her for so many years, which I don't think I would ever gotten with someone that close in that span. But at the same time, I had a roommate, she's, you know, American from Monroe, and I got close with her, you know, and I still talk to her, but obviously not as close as I got with that Russian friend, because I would mostly hang out with my Russian friend and not my roommate. So people, you know, Slavics can find depth in friendships and find good relationships here. You can date someone who's American, and you'll be happy, you know, and most of the times that works for me. I, like I said before in our previous episode, I would not want to date a Slavic man ever.
Amen, sister.
It's, you know, like, I don't know, it's just different, like, maybe for me, since I got so Americanized, like, almost lost my accent, basically, worked at 5 jobs here, found connections with coworkers, but I can see how, like, people that are over the age of 45 probably struggling with that idea, but you have nothing to be scared of, you know? Like, if you're 20, younger than 20, fuck you. Go out there and fucking explore and talk to Americans. Find friends. Funny. They're cool. They're funny. It's awesome. If you're younger than 30, you can still find shit to talk about. You're a millennial. There's so many cringy millennials in America that are also as cringy as you. Millennial from Russia.
The best thing is America is so full of different people.
Yeah.
Yes, if you go to only one place, if you take, like, only one class in the university, like your financial class or whatever, if you only take that group, exactly, maybe you, if you go to STEM school or STEM campus, you may not exactly find the most extroverted people there. For me personally, the university that we go to, we have 2 campuses. One of them is full of English, art majors, nursing majors, all that. And then the other campus is STEM major. So it's math, it's computer science, it's engineering, it's all that crap.
Nerds.
And they are nerds. And not to be mean, I love nerds. You know, nerds are great. They're loyal.
They're loyal.
But the fact is, they're very hard to crack.
Yeah.
They're very hard to start a conversation with, unless you know calculus and they need your help.
Yeah.
So that would be a lot of challenges. So just think about changing your environment.
Yeah. Or mindset, too.
Exactly. Join a... Like, if you're young, if you're in a university, join a club. Like, just pick... America is so fucking versatile.
Yeah.
There's so many things to do. You will find, like, a club of Marvel movie lovers. Or, yeah. I don't know. You will find... I promise you, like, you will find something that you will love, and you will find people who think like you.
There's so many K-pop clubs. Every single university has a K-pop club, and they go to places together. They you know, have... It's a student organization. They have a president, a vice president, a treasurer, and everything.
There's a Taylor Swift club.
There is a Taylor Swift club, yeah. Not on UNG campus, though, but I'm sure there is one at the university we go to. I don't want to say it. Obviously, we don't have that many listeners, but, you know, just in case.
Yeah, we don't want to stalk.
We don't
want
to... But just kind of, you know, keeping it private. But I feel like you said, there's a lot of different people, a lot of diversity here. And, like, you might not like talking to, like, let's say white Americans. Dude, there are so many other cultures, nationalities, races that would fit you, probably. You know, like, I found pleasure in talking with a lot of Hispanic people. There is so many similarities in our childhoods and how we were grown and all of these things. And it's so weird how we were grown on completely different continents, different countries with different languages, but we still share the same experiences because of how strict our parents are. And that's how, or like, for example, African-American communities, you know, like, still have a few Black friends who told me, oh my God, we're so similar, this is crazy. Like, you're as white as a white person can get, straight from Europe, from the mountain of Caucasus, you're so Caucasian. But, like, so many things are very similar in how we grew up. Obviously, like, I'm not saying everything is similar, but, having strict parents, having, like, conservative values, traditional values, all of that stuff. So you can find, you know, talking to people, like, very pleasurable from other cultures and diversities as well. A lot of Asians are also very similar to, you know, the way you grew up. you know, since I grew up in Uzbekistan, there is a lot of Korean communities there. Don't ask me how they end up there, because I'm going to talk for an hour. How Koreans ended up in Uzbekistan. But, you know,
there's also a lot of Koreans in Ukraine.
Really?
In one specific city. So there was a Vietnamese dude that moved to Ukraine. It was like a whole Vietnamese community there.
Yeah.
And what they did was they opened their pho restaurant.
Yeah.
And basically, one of the Ukrainian businessmen went to him and bought the patent for this product. And they made, like, the first patent of something similar to, like, the ramen noodles.
Yeah.
In Ukraine. So that's crazy. That's Vietnamese, like whole Vietnamese community in Ukraine. It's crazy. But I see, like, America is so fucking versatile. Yeah. As like, you will find your place here. Like, even if you think, like, we're more similar than we think.
Yeah.
Like, people are not all around the world, you know. If you want to find friends, you will.
Yeah.
If you of course, if you're Slavic and you have the Russian bitch face, that will be harder. But also being friendly and being open-minded is helpful.
Yeah. Obviously, we're not saying stop being friends with Slavic people, if you're Slavic. But if you don't find that satisfaction in some of the Slavic friendships that you might have, because, you know, what's holding you, what's holding your friendship, that's the question. Is it the church? Is it the activities that you do together? What is holding your friendship? If it's solely church activities and just membership at the church, I wouldn't find that satisfactory, because to me, friendship is much deeper than the place where you find it. But obviously, if you have a really good, you know, Slavic friend and you're Slavic, like, props to you, that's amazing. I'm as an extrovert, I still want to go out and have other friends as well. Like, I can talk with a Slavic person about one thing and then go and talk about other things with my other friends who are American, Hispanic, other immigrants from Brazil, Asia, all of those places. And it's just, you know, college also is a place where you meet all sorts of people. You know, you can sit in the class with, just a gay guy with the rainbow flag on his backpack who, you know, is very funny, and it's, you know, talk to him, and he has a lot to say and a lot of good things and interesting things. You can also find in the same classroom a hillbilly from Macon, Georgia, with traditional values, who goes to church every Sunday like a good man.
Like his mama told him.
And also find good conversations with him, too, you know? You look in the other corner, and you can find, like, a Muslim girl who also has a lot of things to say, and a lot of good conversations you can get from that. That's what I found pleasure in. That's what me talking about it right now makes me realize, how much I love going to college and a university, and not only going there just for class and then leaving, because that feels like work to me, but going there, communicating, talking with people, going to Chick-fil-A or Starbucks with them on campus, and just developing those friendships, networks, because you never know, you might end up working for them someday, or they might end up working for you, or you might end up working together, especially if they're from the same major. You join the same club, you find friends in the club. You know, there's just so many options, and if you sit at home and cry about how, oh my god, I have no friends, I only see my friends once a week on Sunday during service, and then we have 15 minutes after service to talk about and go smoke behind the church. Like, if that's your only way of having friends,
you're wrong.
Go outside in the world, go get education. Or go and start working somewhere where you can find friends. We're not saying you can find friends only in college. That's a really good place to start, though. But also, like, don't ignore your coworkers. Ask them about their life. They care, like, and they care if you care. So, you know, the amount of deep conversations we had at work, because we had no tables with the cooks, with servers, with everybody. You know, and I'm nosy. I want to know the drama in the workplace. So I would ask them. Amen, sister. I'm nosy as fuck. So, like, you know, that's just kind of, like, what we talked about today, I feel like. It's just...
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, as we wrap up, I feel like it's just a good... We talked about a lot of things. It's like friendship and culture and religion and a lot of things. I feel like we could make this a two-part episode because I feel like some topics are deeper than they seem. But yeah, I think it's a good place to wrap up and thank you for tuning in with us. And this is kind of our message to Slavic people like us.
Yeah, who speak English.
Who speak English. Also, you need to practice.
You need to practice.
Okay, you need to practice. English and also, with Dash and Diana. Yeah, exactly. And also watch movies. Yeah. Watch movies, TV shows. It helps a ton. Yeah. You know, just, and reach out.
Yeah.
If you would like. If you have any questions, we would love to answer them. DM us. You know where to find us. If you listen to this, you probably know us.
Yeah.
So just DM us if there's something that you would like to hear from us.
Yeah.
We would love to yap because we do love to yap.
Oh, we do. And I think I'm going to post a story with the open-ended question.
Yes, that's really good. Yes,
take
that's
a great idea. Take a picture of us with headphones that's on.
That's a great idea.
Send it. And then next episode, when we do part two of this, we can answer questions from maybe Americans who are also listening, because I have a few college friends who listen to this. And we'll answer questions maybe from an American perspective as well. How do you approach a Slavic person? Because that's a whole other...
Or a girl. Thing.
Or a girl.
Specifically.
Or a guy.
Or a guy. Yep.
You know? So,
if you are an American girl and you're trying to root for a Slavic guy, don't approach him.
Don't approach him.
Because if you approach them, they would be like, are you a feminist? Guys,
you made the first move?
Slavic guys very they love to earn you.
Oh, yeah.
They want to earn you, so.
Playing hard to get is a way to go.
Yeah. This is going to be the second part if you do ask that question. Yeah. So I'm going to answer it.
I mean, I feel like we left out a lot of... when we talked about couples, obviously, we talked about heterosexual couples. I know. Obviously, we only talked about heterosexual couples. So, if you do want to still hear about, like, issues like LGBTQ and Slavic countries, we can definitely talk about it. Because the only reason why we talked about heterosexual couples is because, you know, we're both in those relationships, you know, we both have boyfriends, but we can obviously include, you know, LGBT in the discussion and just kind of talk about that and our views and my views, how we came to America and how I viewed it first and then how it developed. So we can definitely some ideas for the questions for the Insta story, but we're wrapping up. Thank you for listening. As always, thanks, David, for giving us equipment. Today, we recorded this ourselves. So, fuck you, David, for not being here because you're in fucking Florida or whatever. Whatever. I don't want to hear any excuses. But thanks, David, for providing us with equipment. Our Instagram usernames are going to be in the description of the episode as usual. Keep up with our episodes. We try to post as much as we can, but because we have work, we can't really do that sometimes. So, yeah, this was Dasha and Diana with Double D's.
Thank you, guys.